You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
This is Coach Jen from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Mary Kitzmiller from Kemp, Texas, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for December 4th, episode 3829. Good morning, Horse World.
What is your favorite day of the week?
You never stop learning. You never stop understanding. It's more in depth than just riding a horse. Knowing that for the rest of my life I could work on this and I'll never stop learning.
And welcome back, Mary. Mary's here for the second Thursday of every month, and we sit down and chit-chat about all things horse trading. How you been?
Not too shabby, not too shabby. Finally wound down the show season, so that's good.
Oh, that's right. Where did you finally end up in your Stock Horse of Texas series?
We did pretty dang good. So I was one show short of like the minimum amount. So there's 10 shows in the year and they cut your two worst shows if you show in all of them. So they count the 8 remaining shows and I only showed 7. So my points were way down compared to everyone else who did 8 shows. So given that we were 8th overall in the open, which is great in the level 1 open. And we were 5th in trail. We're like in the top 15 in cowork and reining, not our best classes, but he won the ranch pleasure title for the year, which,
wow.
He's a ranch pleasure maniac.
So, and only 7 shows.
Yes. Yes.
Wow. So explain to everybody what a ranch pleasure class looks like for those of us who are unfamiliar.
They have a few different versions of them. AQHA will have a ranch pleasure rail class where it's like a hunter under saddle type thing where everyone's in the ring at the same time and the judge calls out the gates and you do them. For our association, it's a pattern on the rail, and there's several different patterns. And here's the funny thing. They actually put out signs around the arena that say what to do when. Like, so say extended trot here, extend, you know, jog here, stop, turn, blah, 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 which is kind of cool because you never have to memorize the pattern. And they're looking for a horse with really good clean gaits that has really bright expression. They don't want the horse. I've seen people kind of over stylizing it, which is concerning, but they want the horse to like look up and through the bridle. It's as if, okay, like the extended trot is like, okay, I've got to check hundreds of acres of fencing today. What is the gait that I'm going to do? I'm going to do a nice big open posting trot so I don't wear out my horse too much, but I can get some ground covered. So you're just thinking about what would a pleasurable ranch horse that I've got to go around and do the chores today. What would that horse look like if it was a really nice horse? And so Remy apparently is a savant when it comes to that. So yeah, he's done quite well.
Yay! So of all of the different classes, which one do you think you personally felt like you had the most improvement in over last year?
I think reining. Because we're finally, I haven't really hammered trying to get sliding stops on him because he's, you know, he's just not really built for that. And horses only have so many stops in their lifetime before the equipment starts wearing down. And so I've never really wanted to just like run them down and try and slide them a whole bunch of times. But over the years, we've just slyly kept working on it. And he's finally starting to get it. Our lead changes are coming together. And I had a huge aha moment this year that anytime I feel like taking up more rein on him because he feels a little amped up and nervous. I found if I just throw the reins away and just trust him, he's so totally fine. And so I'll go into a class and he'll start the first couple strides with his head up in the air. And he's like, I can feel his back tense. And I used to like try to gather him up and calm him. And what I do now is I just keep those reins nice and loose. And I'm like, you'll figure it out. And within three strides, he's like, oh yeah, I'm cool. We're fine.
Oh, wow. That's so cool. Well, yeah, that makes, and then he feels more confident in you. It's reciprocal, I'm sure.
Yes. Yeah. And it's one of those things where you have to act how different than how you feel sometimes. And, you know, it's a combination of, this is what's really fun about showing is each horse has different preferences and it's a very much a psychological game. So some horses might want the security of you, you know, taking up the reins and saying, it's okay. You're, you know, I'm here. I got you. And you don't learn it until you just go to a million shows and you try out different things. But with Remy, at home, when I ride him at home, I never care about, I know he's not going anywhere. He's slow as molasses. And so I never really care about where his head is, what's going on here or there, because I know he'll get into frame eventually. So I just ride him loose reins, heck, bridleless half the time. And when I would go to shows, I realized I was trying to micromanage him too much. And so even though he would get real nervous, right, he has this thing where he's calm. And then right before we go in, his head shoots up and he's like, ah! And sort of fakes me out a little bit. And if I go opposite to my nature would be to also go, ah, and then we feed off each other. If I go, no, we're at home. This is just like home. And I throw those reins to him and I sit on him like, you're not going to take off. You're not going to break gate. I know you. He goes, oh yeah, that's right. I'm not going to do those things. Okay, cool. And so it's been really fun learning that about him.
Yeah. And that is an interesting point too, because I concur that there are some horses who want that packaged up feeling. It helps them feel secure. Mm-hmm. And there are other horses that they just need to throw their head up. They need to snort twice and then they're over it and they're done. And if you try to micromanage, that tends to bottle them up. How interesting. Had a very similar light bulb moment with James a few weeks back, the young horse that I have. I'm still learning about what his personality, what his innate fight or flight reactions are versus what he's been, how he's been trained to act. I'm still learning those little bits. And he wants a little more freedom than I thought he did, but that's really hard because his flight reflexes are pretty damn quick. Mm-hmm. In that, you know, he can do a 180 and be across the field before I can blink. So it's really hard for me to give him that freedom without giving up so much that we end up across the field and maybe in a disastrous spot. It's a very fine balance in there. Very interesting. I appreciate that. That's supporting. I needed that today. Thank you.
Yay!
Well, this is the after we catch up, regular listeners know, after we catch up on what Mary is with, been up to, we always have a training tip followed by listener questions. And if you want to submit a listener question, you have to be an auditor. And if you want to be an auditor, you need to go to Horse Radio Network and go to the Horses in the Morning Show. And you can find a little place there to become an auditor and help support the show and help support hosts like Mary. And that gets you into the place where you get to ask questions of our various hosts. So what is our training tip today and what inspired it?
So these last few shows, as many of you know, I've recently acquired a Malinois puppy and her name is Ember. And she is 6 months old today, actually. Today's her half birthday. Yeah, I just realized that. And she's doing amazing. And, you know, like any puppy, she is all over the place, very ADHD. Plus, she's a high energy breed. But I wanted to start taking her with me to horse shows as early as possible and just get her acclimated. So that's what the training tip surrounds with both horses and dogs, is the importance of just taking them on the road and letting the trip do the training. And there was a really great cowboy, Bobby Kerr, who recently passed away, and he told me about how he would get his Mustangs ready for the Mustang makeovers. And he would just like haul them to town and, you know, just anywhere he was going, he'd throw the horses in the trailer and go. And
take him to the grocery store.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Like, you know, just go into town, park your trailer, you know, go get your lunch and then go home, or, you know, walk him around the street. He lived in Hyco, which is a very Western, like if you saw a horse riding down the road, you'd be like, yeah, that's normal.
That happened.
Yeah. But he talked about how when you just take him to some of these events, it's like putting 30 days of training on him in a weekend. And that is exactly true. And it's not even that you take them and you're training them really hard over the weekend. Just being there. It's like you put 30 days of solid riding on him.
Very interesting. And that's one of the places where I've had a little bit of a wake-up call. The vast majority of the horses I'm going to call it started over the years have been off the racetrack. And you forget how much they've learned, partly through acclimation, because from a non-horse racing point of view, the training, there's not a lot of that going on. They don't know what legs are. They don't know what bending is.
Yeah.
But they have learned so much through that acclimation process. All the activity and things are constantly changing. A lot of them ship to different tracks. And you forget that not all horses get that. You know, James's under saddle training is way ahead of his acclimation training. He just doesn't understand what the universe is. So that's great. Yeah, good point. So I think some of our questions from our listeners later in the show might play into that. Foreshadowing.
Ooh, yes. I love how there's always the connection.
The connection. And speaking of connections, if you have even a little bit of an internet connection where you live, you need to stop by and visit Chewy. Because heavy new blankets, bulky coolers, tubs of supplements, even prescription items are no problem. At Chewy, every single order over $49 ships for free. So you can stock up on everything your horse needs for fall without the heavy lifting. Believe it or not, I just ordered a bag of beet pulp from Chewy because the price was fantastic and it was free shipping when I added my other stuff. You can order online or in the app, and Chewy will deliver it right to your barn. Fast, free, and hassle-free, so you can spend more time enjoying your autumn rides. You can start shopping now at chewy.com/equine. And something a little bit outside the box for Mary and I today, I have a guest on the show. Yippee! I'd like to welcome to Horses in the Morning, Gay DiRusso from Monterey, California. And she is a trainer of gated horses and people who ride gated horses. Welcome to the show, Gay.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is a completely selfish interview because everybody knows that I recently got a gated horse and I've been having all sorts of interesting adventures getting things right with him. And I found Gay's Facebook page ever so useful. So I invited her on so I could pick her brains on your behalf. Tell us, you're from Monterey, California. How did you come to be involved with gated horses? Because there aren't that many, when you compare it to the greater scheme of things, gated horses right. are very much in the minority.
Yes, there used to be many, many around, you know, years ago before we had a regular car transportation. But when horses went into a sport, it went down. So I fell into it in a roundabout way. So I used to train with Hunter Jumper. And I did that for a long time in New York. And then I moved to California with a new job. And I decided I just wanted a trail horse. And that's kind of how I fell into it. I found some. And then the one that I could afford was probably one of the worst ones, was a gated horse that didn't gait and had pretty much every behavior problem going. And then once I fixed him, people saw me doing it, and then people started coming to me for help. But it was very, very confusing in the beginning, because when you get one, they have all these extra gears, and you're unsure of which gear you're supposed to be in, and even if you get it, how you're supposed to keep it. So it can get very confusing.
Yes. And that was a real light bulb moment for me when I started following you on Facebook. The only experience I'd ever had with gated horses was with a Tennessee walking horse who had what I'm going to call very pure gates. He seemed to have come out of the womb with gates. Perfect.
Yeah.
There was never an issue. And that was the only experience I had. So I assumed that unless you fouled them up, that's the way they were. Explain how that whole gating thing works. And it's more of a spectrum than a walk, trot, canter that those of us in the three gated community understand.
That's right. So with the gated horses, you have these extra gears, and their gates, the one we want, the ones that are smooth, or the four beat gates, are in between the trot and the pace. So on the end of the spectrum, you have a trot, and on the other end, is the pace. So in between those areas is where your flat walk, your running walk, your foxtrot, your saddle gate, your rack, and all those things are. So you end up getting all these extra gears. It's kind of like someone giving you a Porsche, but you don't know how to drive it. And, you know, so you might get it in gear and kind of grind the gears. And that's the hardest part, is that many, many years ago, they were bred a little bit differently. So they were easier to gate, because there's some people that remember getting on as a kid and they go, they just went. And I go, that's correct. But as people showed more and it became more of a sport, the breeding changed more for looks, and some of it for spirit and leg action. And that's when some of the breeding started to change. And then we ended up getting more pacey horses in the walking horse community, and almost more trotty horses with like the Rocky Mountain horses. And even the fox trotters, they started mixing things, like to get a bigger stride, they put some walking horse breeding within the fox trotter. So it all started getting mixed. And some think it's for the better, some think it's for the worst. You know, it just depends on your opinion and what you're doing. But for the people just getting into it, it made it harder, because we all thought they would just gate.
That's what I thought.
And then we found out they don't.
Some still do, but some of them don't. You ended up delving into the rabbit hole that is gating horses, because you changed disciplines. In your experience, are the majority of folks that you work with looking for horses that are riding on trails and in the open, or do you still have people who just do arena riding and showing?
Yeah. So my people, because I just do naturally gated horses, we don't show. So all of my people are trail riders usually. And it's usually older women getting back into horses, you know, now that they have the time and money to do so.
Yeah. Very interesting. Yes. So as I tend to see a reoccurring theme when you post videos with you working with students, that there's a lot of horses who are people who are struggling with keeping the appropriate gait on their horse. And one of the things that immediately drew me into your systems and your videos is that you put appropriate emphasis on the rider's influence to get those gates. It's not just the horse gating or not gating, or that's the horse correct. Not gating well. It's the rider that is either creating the problem or creating the success. So what are some of the most, what is probably the most common question or difficulty that people come to you with that they need help with? What's the number one?
The first part is usually they don't know what the gates feel like, because they've never had a gated horse before. So it's hard knowing, of course, if you're doing something right, if you've never done it before or felt it before. So that's a big challenge for most people. Some people are gating, they just don't know they are. So like the gates, the flat walk and the running walk, they're just walking gates. So everybody thinks they're just walking. And I go, that's correct. But it's their gait. It's a, you know, it's a fast walk and then a faster walk is what the flat walk and the running walk is, but it's still a walk. So everybody goes past the gate thinking it's some supersonic fast speed that they're supposed to get.
Mary?
Oh yeah. That was actually one of my biggest mistakes. I am not a gated expert, but there was a period of time where I was getting a lot of gated horses in training, and I did it with the caveat of I'm not training your horse to gait better. I'm just training him to horse better and, yeah. you know, whatever gating. But, you know, I would fool around, you know, with the gates, obviously. And I would, what I always thought was like, oh, this horse gating is so good right now. It's so smooth. And the owner would inform me, oh, no, that's pacing. We don't want that. And then they would actually show me how to gate. I'm like, this feels completely different than what I was thinking. And yeah, right. I didn't know what to feel for.
Yeah, it is different.
So what are the, again, so many light bulb moments that the variety of gates and something else, the genetics community has figured out that there are some there's some DNA that they can track. You can do a genetic test to see whether or not your horse could be predisposed to gaiting or not gaiting. Have you ever
seen registered quarter horses gait and gated Mustangs too?
Yeah. Well, my thoroughbred has a wicked running walk.
Yes.
Hello.
Isn't that crazy? So yeah, some of them do have that gene in there. And some horses, the trotting horses, if they're riding with gated horses, because they're all like, you know, as a herd, they're trying to do the same thing. Some of the horses will start gating when they're riding next to a gated horse.
Interesting.
It is. It's very weird that they pick up each other's rhythm. But some gated horses will start to trot if they're riding with trotting horses.
It never occurred to me that could happen. And
yeah,
I didn't realize my horse was doing a running walk till I learned a little bit. It's like, oh my gosh, that's what he does.
Right.
Because it is distinctly, it's still four beats, but right. It feels distinctly different from a horse that's walking fast.
Yeah. Yes.
And I rode a lot with gated folks, and I would set up a ride. We'd all go out riding together and they'd say, oh, you're on a three gated horse. You're not going to like this. I said, no. He walks super fast. We'll be fine.
Right.
And then we would get out there and they go, oh, he does walk super fast, because pretty sure they didn't realize that either. They also assumed that he was just walking super fast. And
right.
I learned about that a little bit more. So when somebody is at home training their gated horse, because let's face it, every time we get on our horses, we're either training them or untraining them.
Correct.
Talk about the role that the horses relaxation and balance plays in being in maintaining, creating and maintaining gait and maintaining the appropriate fitness so they can keep gating.
Right. So these horses, when they move, if their frame of their body changes, like they're either round, which is what we usually want most horses to do, or you'll see with some of the gated horses, they're inverted or like their head's up and their back is kind of arch, it changes the way they move. And so usually if they're engaged more, you know, they'll either gait well or they'll start going towards the trotty side of the spectrum if they get too much roundness with some of the horses, especially if they trot when they're loose. And then if you invert them, that usually takes them more towards the lateral side of the gated spectrum or going towards the pace. But if they get too much inversion or too much tension around their neck and their spine, they go very lateral. And that's usually when they pace. So you're trying to get right in between those two. And I think that's hard for trainers helping people and people learning to ride it, because we're always trying to round them out and bring their heads down. And then we find if we do that too much with the gated horses, many of them will fall out of their gait. And so you're trying to ride them more in like a neutral body frame. But many of just we kind of expect when we grow up with horses and we've ridden jumper or reining or any other kind of discipline that they have a lot of training on them. And these horses always don't, because they're bred so calm that many of them take shortcuts. And so you get a horse and you think it knows what to do, but it really has no concept how to bring its head down or give to the bit or bend. And all those things help you to gait the horse. So a lot of beginners get the horses, they don't know what to do, and the horse doesn't know what to do. And that's when the problems begin.
Yes. And because the gated horse currently is something that is sought after by folks who have not trained green horses. And I'm going to say green because,
right.
before this is, it makes it even more complex. How interesting is that? I'm going to wrap this up with one more question. I don't want to suck up too much of your day. You used to hear a lot, and you probably still do hear a lot, that a gated horse should never be allowed to trot, or a gated horse should never be allowed to canter. Where do you fall on there?
I don't follow that concept at all. I think some of it is because some of them had the long feet or the heavier shoes on, it might have been, because some of them wouldn't lunge horses either. I've not had any problems having my horses trot and canter as long as you give them a cue and you don't let them just do it on their own. So I think that might have been part of the problem, is if they went into a trot, the riders didn't know how to get them out of the trot. So the better the riders were, the easier they could keep them in gate or have them canter when they wanted them to canter. But it might be because there were so many newbies in it that if they let them trot or canter because it was easy for the horse would do it more and more and stop gating because the gating was harder for them.
That's interesting.
Is my thought about it. Yes. But there's many Icelandics, Saddlebreds, Morgans that can trot and canter and gate. But a lot of those riders have a lot of skills compared to some of the other gated horse riders.
Yeah, it's just like every other discipline. When you watch somebody who's got some really mad riding skills and training skills ride these horses, it looks completely effortless, completely simple, easy to do, and it's not.
And that's what the sellers want you to think, too. Like, look at them go. And then I'm telling people, like, look at the rider. Like, they're riding. They're not flopping around up there on a loose rein. That's why the horse is gating well.
Yeah.
Well, and the advice I was given, I had a mule years ago that I was trying to make into a show mule, and I could never get him into a canter. He would, what I thought, he would trot, canter. And finally, some people who knew were like, you know, he's really, really gated. And I'm like, oh. And he was probably out of a Tennessee walking horse mare. But so I was like, okay, well, he's gated. And this was my first experience being on anything gated. And I wasn't a trainer at the time. I was a kid. And so I asked around. I'm like, okay, so how do you get them to gate? And the piece of advice I got was get a big bit and make them really angry. And
that's a great way.
Right. So it was like agitate him real bad. And I did not do that, but I did eventually get his gait coming out.
Oh, that's great.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much, Gay, for stopping by with us today.
Awesome.
For folks who are curious and want to reach out to you for some help, where can they find you?
So my website is majesticrider.com. So I have lots of articles and videos on there, as well as YouTube. It's just YouTube's under my name, which is Gay DeRusso. And then on Facebook, if somebody searches Gay DeRusso, it'll pull up all the sites on Facebook too. So you can follow along and get information.
There we go. Well, thanks again. And you have a great day, Gay.
Thank you so much.
Want to reach a passionate, engaged audience of horse lovers? The Horse Radio Network, with thousands of listeners worldwide, offers unique sponsorship opportunities to connect your brand with horse owners, riders, and enthusiasts. Over 90% of our listeners have bought a product from a HRN ad in the past year. Partner with HRN and take your brand to the next level. Visit www.horseradionetwork.com/advertise today.
Speaking of young horses and young dogs, because I have this problem with my puppy too, we have a question from Alicia who says, my three-year-old is perfect in every way, except he constantly chews on the lead rope and the reins. How do I stop him from chewing on stuff without making him head shy? He does not try to bite me. He's not mouthy with me, just obsessed with the reins, lead rope, etc. So yeah, that I've had that issue with my puppy. Instead of walking on the leash, she wants to chew on the leash. So I have a little bit of an out of the box answer, because it's just one of my favorite ways to deal with it. But I'll give you a few tips, you know, just to keep in mind. So you want to focus on rewarding the horse for what you want them to do. So the horse is not going to understand that you don't want them to chew on the reins so much as they're going to understand that you do want them to be quiet. So look for moments where the horse is being quiet and reward those and let the horse know he's doing well. Give him jobs to do every time he's like, yeah, I just got to chew on the reins. Give him something to focus on. Give him something to do that's going to take his mind off of that. And that usually involves busying his feet up a little bit. And when I say that, I don't mean like, you know, run him around in a million circles and punish him. You just want to give him something to do with his feet. So he's like, you know, I better take my mouth off of the lead rope. So it might even be trotting. It might be lateral. It might be backing up. So you do want to kind of just keep his mind on something. Whenever he does chew on it, I don't like just let them chew on it. But at the same time, you know, you are on the right track. You do have good instincts as far as not wanting to like rip it out of his mouth or pop him or something like that. Because not only can that make him head shy, but with some horses, it becomes a game. Like, oh, we're playing tug of war with the rope. Yay.
Yes.
yeah. So you end up creating more problems than you solve. So I just kind of keep it really boring. So when he chews, I just like, take it out of his mouth and I just remove the toy from his mouth and try again. So there's with the reins and stuff with the riding and stuff, there's different bits you can try. I like bits with rollers. So he's got a little fidget toy on his bit and you can find roller bits with both snaffles and shank bits. So the other thing is, and this is my out of the box answer. And also you want to be very consistent with all of these things. It might take a while of just like, no, don't do that. No, don't do that. I said, don't do that. I said, don't do that. And like raising the Malinois puppy, that is what every day is for me. It's like, don't chase the cat. No, I said, don't chase the cat. Remember, don't chase the cat. And I have appropriate consequences and I give her appropriate things to redirect her. But I also have to remember that she's a young puppy and she's going to forget everything we just did. And then at a certain age, things start sticking in their brain. So you got a 3-year-old, that's going to happen. But there's a really cool exercise that I read about in one of Alexandra Curlin's books, who's a really good clicker trainer, and she calls it the 300 peck pigeon game. Long story short, the name of the game comes from science experiments where they were able to get animal behaviorists were able to get a pigeon to peck a target 300 times in a row for one reward. And it was a lesson on like how long can I get this behavior to last, this good behavior that I'm looking for to last, and you know, just have it go on automatic pilot. How long can I draw that out? And that's very much what training with horses is. And you know, initially, maybe when I'm looking for softness, I look for softness in one moment and then one step and then two steps and then four steps. And then pretty soon I can do the whole show pattern with my horse soft and on the bridle. So you can use the same idea for walking with the lead rope. And the story that she anecdote that she uses in her book is this very young mouthy horse that she had. And it just so happened that it was at this boarding barn and the weather was preventing lots of turnout and lunging and all of that stuff. So she really could only walk her horse. And of course he wanted to chew on the rope. And she used clicker training principles, which is just marking good behavior and rewarding it with treats. And so once she got the horse to understand, hey, when you are walking straight, and you're calm and your mouth is quiet, I'm going to give you a click. And you do that several times until the horse is like, oh, okay, I know what behavior gets the click. And then she said, okay, now I know that you can do it for a moment or two. Give me two steps and then I'll click. And then she built this up over time. And it took like over the winter to do this over time of how about 3 steps, now 4 steps, now 10 steps, now 20 steps. And all the way to 300 steps of calm, quiet behavior. So if you're thinking about like the mechanics of how this works, it's 300 steps of quiet, soft, respectful behavior for one click and one treat. Now, you don't have to set it up exactly like that, but it's a really good exercise to get your brain working about where you need to start, what your expectations are, and what kind of diligence it takes to get the behavior to last and last. But man, once you have it, that thing is ingrained for life. It's a really cool exercise.
Interesting. I'm going to take a page out of a really old book. I believe it was Man O' War by the gentleman who wrote the Black Stallion books, whose name escapes me at this particular moment.
Is it Farley? Walter Farley? Or Walter is that the Farley. Illustrator?
Yes, I think the book was called Man O' I think the book was made called Big Red, but it was about Man O' War.
I think I've read it.
In the book, the horse bites and the wise trainer puts a hot baked potato inside the sleeve of his jacket. And the horse bites the potato. The horse bites the potato and says, "Oh, that was awful." And that instantly cures him of biting. But I took a page from that. James, the baby horse, also uber mouthy. Uber mouthy. Not too much on a human being, but if anything gets within, let's say, 4 inches of his face, it's in his mouth instantaneously. So things that could do that, for example, lead ropes and reins, the traditional no-chew sprays that they make have no effect. But I found that I had some of the nastiest, cheapest, most obnoxiously perfumed cleaning product in the barn. It was soap that you could, like, generic soap that you could wash tables or floors or whatever in. And I watered that down enough that it still stank really bad, but that was about it. And I sprayed all the surfaces with it. And he doesn't want to put them in his mouth because they smell so perfumey. And it's really obnoxious. Think Axe cologne times 10. And it's super cheap. So at least that's a, you know, that could be a stopgap measure, because half the battle for me is making sure that those objects are not getting close to his lips to begin with. For example, the lead rope, he can't get it if the lead rope is slack hanging straight down. He has no desire to get it because it's hanging straight down. But if I pull on the lead rope and he doesn't instantly respond, in other words, it goes taut, then it's near his lips and he can bite it. So what I'm doing is rewarding him in two ways. I'm rewarding him for not responding to a soft tension on the reins, on the line, because he didn't move and I pulled. But I'm also teaching him to grab things. And he's going, "Yay, I get to grab things. All you have to do is pull the lead rope and I get to grab things." That's not what I'm moving the lead rope for. So I'm untraining my horse at a rapid rate. So that hyper diligence to not putting the lead rope where he wants to bite it, and he thinks that's a cue to bite it because he succeeded so many times. He's bitten it thousands of times, so he thinks that's what it's for. He's rehearsed the behavior. So that's on me.
Yeah, for the horse, it's kind of like, "Oh, dang, never mind. You're no fun."
Yes,
that's not what I wanted to do. And,
yes.
And I've had people have some success with, oh gosh, there's a trainer who calls it like brushing their teeth with the mouth, like with the rope. Like, yep. Oh, okay, you want the rope? You know, let's make that rope real busy and wiggle it back and forth to where the horse is like, it's not fun anymore. You made it weird.
Yes. Another technique. So you can kind of work with what works with you and your horse. For me, keeping it out of the zone helped a lot. And not reinforcing the behavior by rewarding him by pulling on it. Great question, Alicia. And get back to us. Post over on there on the HRN Auditor's Facebook page what techniques you're using and how they're working for you, because there's so many different ways to deal with that problem. Great question. We're going to take a quick break here and hear from one of our important sponsors. And when we come back, we're going to get another listener question.
For first-time horse owners and new riders, finding the information and support you need can be challenging. That's why Equine Network has partnered with Sentinel and Absorbine to bring you My New Horse. From important horsekeeping information and how-to videos to social media communities, exclusive experiences, and more, My New Horse is your one-stop shop for riders of all levels and disciplines looking for easy-to-understand horse care information and guidance. Start your horse ownership journey today. Visit mynewhorse.com.
So we've got a question from Caitlin. This is a tricky question, and She wants to know, how do you work with an aggressive mare in the warm-up ring? I'm a hunter jumper with a lovely four-year-old mare who is the ultimate boss mare. She really cares about her environment and any horse that comes and goes, but very brave otherwise. She's already on my regimate, which has worked for her heat cycles, and I've had her tested. Just very boss mare, which can be difficult in the warm-up ring. And yes, we do deck her out in red ribbons. So yeah, that's a tricky one, especially like when your horse is great at home, they're great in the show pen, but they can't handle crowds. And the reason I wanted to pick this question is because even though Remy is a gelding, he also has some boss mare tendencies. In fact, when I went to pick him up at the corrals, they had thrown him in a small pen with two or three other horses, and he had them going around and around, biting them. He was mad. And I thought, oh my gosh, this horse is going to be so wild. And turns out he wasn't. He was really easy to train. But he has this personal space thing. And what Remy has taught me over the years is, yes, my horse should be able to handle crowds. And I did work on that through lots of training and acclimation. It's not an excuse that he's like, oh, I don't want to be near this horse, because for the safety of everyone around me, I need to be able to walk my horse through crowds and not have him kick the heck out of anyone. But at the same time, I have learned to respect his feelings on, he's like, listen, I will behave, but I just hate being in tight groups of horses. So with Remy, what I finally learned is, and I learned it at this last world show really strongly, we only have one warm-up pen for several divisions of riders, and we have about 200 riders going around a day. And all the other arenas are busy, so there's very little warm-up space. And what ends up happening is everyone's loping around in the same direction in what I call the horse tornado. Like, it's really tight, and you have to be very aware of your surroundings. And you want to get your horse legged up and ready to go. But the more I put Remy in the horse tornado, the more cantankerous he would get. He'd start going around with his ears pinned. Again, he was behaved. He wasn't going to do anything. A horse could run smack into him, and he wasn't going to do anything, but he just hated it. And so what I finally learned with Remy was to respect that and say, listen, you know, I need to get you warmed up, but I understand that going in that is just going to get you cranky. So any of the training warmups I needed to do, I actually came out to the arenas in the middle of the night, usually around 3 a.m., 2 to 3 a.m. And I did whatever training I needed to that morning. And then I'd put him away, you know, give him an early breakfast, put him away, let him settle, let him have his hay. And then any warm up I needed to do past that, obviously I want to get his muscles nice and warmed up, I would either walk him on the outside, just at a walk, just to get him nice and warmed up. I think a walk is a great warm up. Or I would find other areas, like, you know, sometimes I'd find a dirt barn aisle and just go and warm them up there. And I would just enough to where, like, okay, your muscles are warmed up, you're not going to injure anything, and just keep it short and sweet and do what I needed to do just to get him in the pen. And that's what worked for him, instead of just getting him angry. So you don't always have that convenience. But in terms of your mare, some mares, it's not that they're really aggressive so much as they're very aware of their space, and the warm-up ring can feel really crowded and unpredictable. So yeah, what you want to do,
the bubble of comfort is tough to maintain.
And I get that. I'm the same way. I do not like people standing within 2 feet of my space. Like, you know, that's why that was one of the very rare blessings of the COVID era. I was like, oh, social distancing. This is lovely.
Yeah, I've done the same thing. I find myself, when I'm standing in line for anything, I have 6 feet between me and the next person, and I like it.
Yeah. When someone's breathing down my neck, I'm like, you know, I'm starting to rage. So you want to keep her focused on you instead of what's going on around you. So, you know, doing a lot of simple, repeatable tasks to keep her busy: circles, serpentines, yielding the hindquarters, nothing complicated, just enough movement that she stays in work mode. So I really like serpentines for this. if she feels really tense, I wouldn't do a lot of just parking and standing with her, because it gives her more time to stare down other horses, which is like me in lines. If I have to stand in a line for too long, I'm like, you know, very angry. So, you know, you don't have to like have her running around or anything, but, you know, just walk her forward and get her to think about where she's putting her feet. And you can do this in a very small space. Sometimes I don't have room to like, or time to go walk around, because maybe I'm two out in my class. And so I'll tell my horse, hey, back up a step. Now walk forward a step. Now soften your face a little bit. How about you flex your head? I just give them a little something to focus. And, you know, you're almost creating like a focus cue. Anytime you feel her attention go to the other horses, give her something to focus on. So one thing I really like for this is a head down cue. So anytime my horse, his head shoots up and he gets really nervous, I say, no, just put your head back down again. And he'll do it and he'll calm down. And then a few seconds later, he's like, no, I have to focus on something else. I said, no, just put your head down. And it's one of those great cues, great things to teach your horse, that not only gets their focus back on you, but it actually creates more relaxation. And then I would say, again, just like we said earlier, you want to keep a safe buffer zone with your horse. Don't try to squeeze, and you probably know this, you know, this goes without saying, but don't try to squeeze between horses. Give her a nice little bubble. This is where the red ribbons come in handy, if other people in the warm-up pen are mindful of that. And then I would say the last two things would be to practice traffic at home if you can. So maybe going out on trail rides, riding with other horses in the ring often. And this is great because you can control what happens. So you can tell your, I've had horses that were afraid of riding with other horses. So I have a buddy get on a horse and I could direct my friend and I say, okay, go ahead and ride on past. And I can control when and where that happened and then repeat it over and over until the horse was, we would play like a little game of leapfrog in the arena of I pass you, now you pass me. For added bonus, you can add clicker training to it. So I've done that where I'd have someone leapfrog from behind me. So they pass in front of me. And as soon as the other horse passed, I would click and give my horse a treat. So they learn that, oh, other horses passing can be nice. And that ties into just reward every moment she checks back into you. So anytime that she lets out a breath, she flicks her ear towards you, she relaxes her neck, mark those moments so that she learns to focus on you. And, you know, that might be scratching her on the neck or giving her a loose rein or giving her her favorite treat. So I'd say keep her mind busy, keep her focused, keep her bubble safe. And the more she stays in the job, the less time she has to manage the whole warm-up ring.
Perfect. Yeah, that's a tricky one. I like the idea of creating a positive reinforcement scenario so that the horse is thinking about the whole experience positively going forward, so that the warm-up ring currently is an unpleasant experience from the horse's point of view. Yeah, the crouchy. Yeah, I like the idea of doing that. Would it be useful to start that process from outside the arena before she gets to the point of being grumpy grouchy? So you're standing outside and we go through that process.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And sometimes what I found works, like I said, this works for the shows that I'm at. There's one warm-up pen, and sometimes I have to go into the horse tornado to walk a lap. And what I'll tend to do is I'll take him in there, get a little focus, and then leave and say, okay, let's go stand over in this corner now. And, or let's go walk down this aisle. And that's better warm up for my guy than actually going around and training him. So, you know, you let him be in the pressure zone for a little bit and then take him out and you let him breathe. So It takes some time to figure out what they need, because you've got to figure out some horses really need a lot of warm up. So you've got to play around with, you've got to be really mindful of your times and Like I said, that's where I found getting my training for the day in the middle of the night when there's no one there. And most of the shows I go to, they leave the arena lights on all night so people can do this, because we need a lot of room to do our stuff. Like, you know, if we're working on sliding stops, we need the whole length of the arena. And so you work on that stuff in the middle of the night. Like, okay, you can stop, right? You know, let's make sure your stops are good. Great. And then all I need right before the show is just to warm up his muscles. I shouldn't be having to train on him before the class.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You hear this from trainers all the time, is you're not training your horse at the horse show. You should be showing using skills that have already been confirmed. You don't need to literally train them. You go, yep, we've got that today and we're ready to go. So I wonder, I'm curious, because she doesn't mention, Caitlin doesn't mention in her post whether or not the horse feels this way. If she's a hunter jumper, I'm guessing she does flat classes, under saddle classes with the horse, if the horse feels this way when she does the flat classes, or if it's specifically the tornado that is
the warm-up arena. Oh, I didn't even clock that in the thing. Okay, it does say she can be very difficult in the warm-up ring. Yeah. But yeah, it would be interesting to know in the flat classes. And the same thing, I've shown a lot of flat classes over the years, and it seems like a simple class. You're like, we're just going around in a circle. No, there's all sorts of strategy to it, of making your horse look the best in front of the judge and using your corners and creating space. I have no problem, and I've never found that it has affected me in rail class, of if I find people aren't being very mindful and they're starting to crowd in, I'll cut across the dang arena and say, there's a big spot over there, I'm going there. And I would rather do that and keep my horse calm. And if it costs me some points, it costs me some points. But I would hope a judge would recognize that I'm using my space wisely, not just sitting there and let all the other horses gang up on my horse. So I have no problem going to the inside track, because I'm like, my horse canters faster than everybody else, so I'm going to lope him on the inside. And when I can find the rail, I will. So I will do a lot of that. Yeah, because Remy doesn't like horses loping up behind him. And so I keep that very, or I'll take a couple, if there's, you know, if there's a line of us on the, you know, the long end of the arena and the judge says canter, I let everybody else canter for a little. You have time. You have a little bit of time. I let everyone else canter on ahead. I look ahead. I'm like, okay, I got like now 3 or 4 horse lengths. Now I'm going to canter. I don't take half an hour to do it, but I think good judges recognize, like, okay, you are managing the situation. It's not that you can't get your horse to do it. They're going to give you a little leeway.
And the temptation is to just stick to it, but each and every class you have to be riding the horse that's there now, and you have to balance whether or not continuing doing something that you think might preserve or gain you points versus have a detrimental effect on the horse's training, so that the next time you go into the class, a problem that you already know you're struggling with could be made worse by doing this now. Interesting stuff. There's so many decisions to be made.
Yeah, inner classes you don't want to be judged in. They used to do this when I was a kid. You could turn your number upside down. You paid it into the class, and then, you know, then you could do whatever you want. And every so often, if you're like, okay, my horse handled this really well for a whole minute, now I'm just going to come to the center of the arena and stand. And you don't want to like disrupt the class in any way. Doing your number upside down is courteous to the judge, because it lets the judge know, okay, I don't really need to be judging this person. You don't have to. Yeah, you don't have to. You can still go in the class and be judged. But I have no problem saying, okay, this is the warm-up class, and saying, all right, my horse cantered around to the left and that was really good. I'm just going to go in the center and stay out of everyone's way till we're done. That's all part of the psychological game.
If they're still available, let us know over there on the auditors page whether or not any of you have been to a horse show that allows that. I remember back in the day that you could do that. You could enter the class and check a little box or something on the entry form. Yes, we used a pen and a piece of paper that said you weren't being judged. And you did that. You wore your number on your back upside down so that everybody knew that you were in there to school. But at that point in ancient history, we didn't have schooling warm-up classes, because nowadays you buy a schooling round and you buy a schooling class and they get everybody in the same time. We didn't do that back in the day. So I'm curious if anybody ever does that, or as a show manager, why you wouldn't do that nowadays. Fun stuff. So for folks who want to follow along with what you do, reach out to you to do a clinic or have you help them train their horse or them, where can they find you online?
You can find me on Facebook, Mary Kitts Miller Horsemanship, and I am actually checking my website right now because I may have put it on I have not. I'm going to put my website on hiatus. It's MaryKittsMiller.com, but I want to revamp some things, so just fair warning.
And Mary can always be found on social media, Mary Kitts Miller Horsemanship, and Mary K. Kitts Miller, I believe you are on Facebook?
Yes.
There we go. And if you can't manage any of that, just reach out to me, Jennifer at Horse Radio Network, and I'll make sure that Mary gets it. Thank you again for stopping by, and we'll see you again in January 2026.
Woohoo! Merry Christmas!